signal Genaro to say something. Genaro stood up and came to my side.
"Flame is very important," he said softly. "Do you remember the day when I made you look at the reflection of the sunlight on a piece of quartz when we were sitting on that big flat rock?"
When Genaro mentioned it, I remembered. On that day, just after Don Juan had stopped talking, Genaro had pointed to the refraction of light as it went through a piece of polished quartz that he had taken out of his pocket and placed on the flat rock. The shine of the quartz had immediately caught my attention. The next thing I knew, I was crouching on the flat rock as Don Juan stood by with a worried look on his face. I was about to tell Genaro what I had remembered when he began to talk. He put his mouth to my ear and pointed to one of the two gasoline lamps in the room.
"Look at the flame," he said. "There is no heat in it. It's pure flame. Pure flame can take you to the depths of the unknown."
As he talked, I began to feel a strange pressure. It was a physical heaviness. My ears were buzzing, my eyes teared to the point that I could hardly make out the shape of the furniture. My vision seemed to be totally out of focus. Although my eyes were open, I couldn't see the intense light of the gasoline lamps. Everything around me was dark. There were streaks of chartreuse phosphorescence that illuminated dark, moving clouds. Then, as abruptly as it had faded away, my eyesight returned. I could not make out where I was. I seemed to be floating like a balloon. I was alone. I had a pang of terror, and my reason rushed in to construct an explanation that made sense to me at that moment. Genaro had hypnotized me using the flame of the gasoline lamp. I felt almost satisfied. I quietly floated, trying not to worry. I thought that a way to avoid worrying was to concentrate on the stages that I would have to go through to wake up. The first thing I noticed was that I was not myself. I could not really look at anything because I had nothing to look with. When I tried to examine my body, I realized that I could only be aware, and yet it was as if I were looking down into infinite space. There were portentous clouds of brilliant light and masses of blackness. Both were in motion. I clearly saw a ripple of amber glow that was coming at me like an enormous, slow ocean wave. I knew then that I was like a buoy floating in space and that the wave was going to overtake me and carry me. I accepted it as unavoidable, but just before it hit me, something thoroughly unexpected happened. A wind blew me out of the wave's path. The force of that wind carried me with tremendous speed. I went through an immense tunnel of intense colored lights. My vision blurred completely, and then I felt that I was waking up, that I had been having a dream, a hypnotic dream brought about by Genaro. In the next instant, I was back in the room with Don Juan and Genaro. I slept most of the following day. In the late afternoon, Don Juan and I again sat down to talk. Genaro had been with me earlier, but had refused to comment on my experience.
"Genaro again pushed your assemblage point last night," Don Juan said. "But perhaps the shove was too forceful."
I eagerly told Don Juan the content of my vision. He smiled, obviously bored.
"Your assemblage point moved away from its normal position," he said, "and that made you perceive emanations that are not ordinarily perceived. Sounds like nothing, doesn't it? And yet, it is a supreme accomplishment that the new seers strive to elucidate."
He explained that human beings repeatedly choose the same emanations for perceiving, because of two reasons. First, and most important, because we have been taught that those emanations are perceivable. And second, because our assemblage points select and prepare those emanations for being used.
Every living being has an assemblage point, he went on, which selects emanations for emphasis. Seers can see whether sentient beings share the same view of the world by seeing if the emanations their assemblage points have selected are the same.
He affirmed that one of the most important breakthroughs for the new seers was to find that the spot where that point is located on the cocoon of all living creatures is not a permanent feature, but is established on that specific spot by habit. Hence the tremendous stress the new seers put on new actions, on new practicalities. They want desperately to arrive at new usages, new habits.
The Nagual's blow is of great importance, he went on, because it makes that point move. It alters its location. Sometimes it even creates a permanent crevice there. The assemblage point is totally dislodged, and awareness changes dramatically. But what is a matter of even greater importance is the proper understanding of the truths about awareness, in order to realize that the point can be moved from within. The unfortunate truth is that human beings always lose by default. They simply don't know about their possibilities.
How can one accomplish that change from within? I asked.
The new seers say that realization is the technique, he said. They say that, first of all, one must become aware that the world we perceive is the result of our assemblage points being located on a specific spot on the cocoon. Once that is understood, the assemblage point can move almost at will as a consequence of new habits.
I didn't quite understand what he meant by habits. I asked him to clarify his point.
The assemblage point of man appears around a definite area of the cocoon because the eagle commands it, he said. But the precise spot is determined by habit, by repetitious acts. First, we learn that it can be placed there, and then we ourselves command it to be there. Our command becomes the eagle's command, and that point is fixated at that spot. Consider this very carefully. Our command becomes the eagle's command. The old seers paid dearly for that finding. We'll come back to that later on.
He stated once again that the old seers had concentrated exclusively on developing thousands of the most complex